Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
And we are back. Crossover podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. And Howard, we are days away from the official start of free agency, but we've got a lot to talk about on this show, don't we?
You said days away, and I wasn't sure if that was D-A-Y-S or D-A-Z-E. We are days away from free agency, and I'm already in a freaking daze. And the more we talk about Kyrie, which we will, and the Nets, which we will, the deeper into the daze, D-A-Z-E, I will go.
That is correct. And we are going to begin this show talking about the evolving situation between Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets. We're recording this on Monday evening Eastern time. So I certainly hope overnight, Howard, we don't have any more developments. But the most up-to-date developments that we have is that in addition to there being an impasse between Kyrie Irving and the Nets, as was first reported by The Athletic when it comes down to their contract negotiations. I believe the New York Daily News was the first to report that the Nets had granted Kyrie permission to seek a sign and trade. That reporting was quickly followed up by some reporting from Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN saying there really wasn't any interest in a Kyrie Irving sign and trade from teams across the league, except for the Los Angeles Lakers. And on the Nets side, there was really no interest in what the Lakers might have to offer in a deal. Also, you've got Kevin Durant kind of in the middle of all this, reports that he may ask out if the Kyrie situation goes south in Brooklyn. Yet Brian Windhorst on ESPN on Monday saying the Nets were prepared, if it came to it, to losing both of their stars, if it means not going through what they went through last season. So, Howard, your thoughts on where we are between Kyrie and Brooklyn?
Man, there's just so much to unpack. I was getting ready for this earlier in the day by typing out some thoughts on this whole thing. And then you and I went over some other topics that we're going to get to. By the time I got to the other topics, I already had like three pages of typed notes on just the Nets situation itself, because this thing has got so many layers to it. Let's start with this. There's definitely some posturing going on here, okay? Like, there absolutely is some posturing by Kyrie's camp, by the Nets, pretty much by everybody except for maybe Kevin Durant. Like, there's some speculation about Kevin Durant and some feeling of where Kevin Durant might land in all this and whether he might push his way out too. But like, his is the only, he individually and his camp are the only ones who seem like are not actually actively trying to leverage anything, pressure anybody, spin the public. Everybody else, I have, like, I'm taking so many freaking grains of salt with all of this. I still believe there is a scenario where Kyrie is simply putting his maximum pressure on the Nets to try to get the contract he wants, because the alternative, Chris, is that he is going to pass up tens of millions of dollars in guaranteed money from the Nets, even in a shorter deal than he wants, even for a lesser deal than he wants, even for a deal that has maybe more caveats on games played and all these other things. Giving that up, saying screw you Nets, probably means taking a $6 million mid-level exception with the Lakers and losing his bird rights along the way, by the way. Anybody who thinks that he can go to the net to the Lakers, pass up whatever it's going to be. Let's say it was 2 years and $60 million, 2 years and $70 million, whatever from the Nets. To go take a $6 million mid-level exception with the Lakers, he will not have bird rights, folks. He gives them up. So next summer, unless the Lakers somehow clear a massive amount of salary cap room, they still can't pay Kyrie Irving his max. So he wouldn't just be giving up a ton this season. He wouldn't just be giving up a ton over a multi-year deal that the Nets could give him that nobody else can. If he goes and takes the mid-level from the Lakers because they have nothing to give the Nets that they would want, which, by the way, is just apparent fact. It is self-evident fact. The only thing, look at the Lakers' salaries, folks. The only person who makes sense in a trade is Russell Westbrook, and there's no way the Nets have any interest in Russell Westbrook. So once you take him off the board, there is no combination of contracts that don't involve either LeBron or Anthony Davis that could even make up Kyrie's contract. So it is literally impossible to come up with a sign and trade unless it involves Westbrook, and there's no reason in the world for the Nets to want Russell Westbrook. So then Kyrie's only path to the Lakers, if that's where he most wants to be, is the mid-level exception. In addition to all the other posturing here, I certainly think there's a little bit of posturing to the Nets making it clear, putting it out there that, hey, we're prepared to lose both if we have to, because that is potentially calling the bluff of Kyrie. If Kyrie is saying, if you lose me, you're going to lose Kevin Durant too, the Nets, what's the obvious position to take if you're the Nets then? Fine. Okay. Go ahead. We're calling the bluff. And it may not be a bluff. Maybe Kevin Durant will want out. But that is the natural position for the Nets to have if we're playing out this whole thing of targeted leaks and targeted messaging. All that said, Chris, I will wrap this initial presentation on this note. There is a sense around the league that this is where it's going, that the Nets are going to end up losing both guys, that they will either trade Kyrie, sign and trade Kyrie. Kyrie will walk away and take a tens of millions of dollar hit to go sign with the Lakers, which, by the way, Kyrie LeBron reunion, I can't even wrap my head around at this stage, considering Kyrie forced his way off of LeBron's team just a mere 5 years ago. And if that happens, if that comes to pass, I think people around the league are getting the sense that Kevin Durant will go also. That's a lot. I still have to believe there's something in between there, but by the way, if you're going to go down that path, if you're trading Kevin Durant, can't wait to see what that package is. Kyrie's leaving. You might as well trade Ben Simmons too, because you're in a rebuild now. And I certainly do not want to place all the burdens of the franchise on Ben Simmons' shoulders, given everything we've seen with him over the last year or so.
Well, as you speak, Howard, we have another development to this story. Kyrie Irving, according to Shams Charania of The Athletic, who I believe had this first, he is opting into his $37 million player option for next season. The quote that Irving gave, according to Shams, "Normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow. I've made my decision to opt in. See you in the fall, A11 even," which I believe is his Twitter account. I don't know what any of those words mean or that sentence mean. I'm sure it means something to Kyrie. I just don't know what it means. So, all right, there we go, Howard. We have Kyrie Irving opting into his contract for one more season, which, all right, now we're now in uncharted territory here. We're all our notes are out the window, and we're now reacting to
this. Oh, no, I still got plenty of notes that are relevant.
Okay, but, well, I'm just saying I had some thoughts on where he might go, and I was going to say, like, the challenge of signing the $6 million exception is you devalue yourself. You also have issues potentially as a union leader. You know, all those things I had now completely gone. So Kyrie Irving opting into his contract. This feels like a win for Brooklyn. I don't know. Kyrie back for next season. You're paying him a lot of money, but it's just for 1 year. You know, this is that's it. So you can see how this all plays out. Look, I've been vocal about this, Howard, and I know you disagree with me to an extent. But I've been vocal that if the Nets just brought the band back together, that's a championship team. It is. Kevin Durant, Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris, Seth Curry, Nick Claxton, Bruce Brown if he comes back. Like, that's seven guys that are really good, two of which you can mark as two of the best scorers in the entire NBA. That's got a team that's got shooting. It needs athleticism, needs front court help, I'll give you that. But that's a team that goes into next season as a potential title contender. So, like, if you're Brooklyn, you got to feel pretty good about this. And look, you know, there clearly is some, there has been some damage done between Kyrie and the Nets. No question about that. But if they win, does that not resolve all issues? And if they win this year and there is no COVID issue that keeps Kyrie out of the lineup in the same way it did this past season, Nets can still sign him to a contract. I'm not sure. Again, we'll react to this in real time. Can the Nets extend him, you know, during the year? I don't know what the rules are on something like that. But this is the kind of situation where this could all be resolved very quickly. Now, alternatively, could be a disaster. I mean, Kyrie going into a season as a free agent to be, no certainty there. You can see where things might fall apart. But Kyrie coming back, rejoining a healthy Kevin Durant, rejoining a healthy Joe Harris, Ben Simmons playing for the first time in over a year. I mean, I interpret this decision by Kyrie as a big win for Brooklyn. They get their guy back, and they don't have to commit massive long-term money to him.
Yes, all of that, absolutely. It is a huge win for Brooklyn. On top of that, let's go back to something I said in the opening about posturing, about positioning, about spin and everything else. In my notes, my extensive notes, by the way, I think I might just spend the rest of this podcast just laughing out loud. In my notes, one of the things I had noted was that the Nets saying to Kyrie, as was reported by the New York Daily News earlier today, hey, you know what? Go ahead. You have permission. Go seek sign and trades. You know what Kyrie Irving likely found out there when he went and sought those sign and trades? That they're not there. That not that many teams want to take a flyer on Kyrie or that want to acquire him in a sign-and-trade in which he's going to be asking for 4 years at or near the max and then taking on all that comes with him. How many teams out there? Very, very few. I was asking a couple people of this earlier today, and aside from the Lakers who have you know, look, they're desperate. They're desperate to do anything right now. The only other team that somebody suggested to me might have some interest in Kyrie and could handle all that comes with him was the Miami Heat.
Yeah, I heard that too. Go ahead.
Right. So this, but Chris, this is the logical endpoint of what just happened over the course of not just today, but the last several days. Kyrie wants more than they want to give him. Kyrie's pissed off that they don't want to commit as much as he thinks he should be committed to. Well, then fine. Somebody else will give it to me. Go ahead, Kyrie. Go see who will commit to you. Go see who out there wants to acquire you in a sign-and-trade with all that comes with it, not to mention having a hard cap by doing it. There's nothing out there, Chris. That's the bottom line. Kyrie decided to opt in because he realized the market for him does not exist, at least not at the level that he wants it. Even if you just, if he were a free agent tomorrow, I'm telling you, there are not teams knocking down his door. This is not, by the way, me throwing shade. This is just the reality. As talented as he is, as gifted as he is, and we have all seen him at his best, and he's an incredible player, it's all the other stuff that comes with him. It's everything that the rest of the league has seen, not just in the last couple years with Brooklyn, but over the last 5 years, going all the way back to forcing his way out of Cleveland at a time that they were on a roll of three straight finals, and he's with the greatest player of his generation, LeBron James, forcing his way out, ending up in Boston, pledging that he's going to spend the rest of his career in Boston, leaving Boston anyway, and then everything he did in Brooklyn. That has a cost. That has a cost, and the cost for Kyrie is that the market isn't there right now because teams are looking at him and going, man, great talent, can't trust him. That's the bottom line, and that is the lesson of all this. And I will just say, I think that him opting in, okay, there is a commitment now contractually to the Nets, but that doesn't mean that they can't trade him. You're right, the idea of the extension could still be on the table. I think you can extend all the way up until the eve of training camp or some date in October. So they could still have extension talks off of the 1 year deal that he's now opted into. I wouldn't expect that, but it's not impossible. But for the moment, I think crisis averted, but they could still trade him. If somebody can absorb his $37 million and has a package that the Nets want in return, I wouldn't rule that out either.
I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, I guess, but you know, taking Kyrie on a 1 year contract and probably not looking to give up much in return, that seems a little, I can't get my head wrapped around that. I feel like this is going to be a year where we see what we have with Kyrie and Kevin Durant. I mean, they have never once, Howard, played, they've never played a full season together. They haven't, you know?
Or even close.
Kevin missed the entire full first year. Last year, you've got Kyrie in and out of the lineup, COVID issues, like, presumably, and let's hope New York City doesn't reinstitute a vaccine mandate for Kyrie's sake, presumably this is the year everybody's back, everybody's healthy. Ben Simmons gives them defensive versatility. Like, there's a pathway here, Howard, to see this team live up to its lofty expectations. There is. So I'm curious to see how it all plays out. I still think they have the ability to win a championship next year. I know it doesn't, I know it's not looking that way right now, but I think they're still, that's still a possibility for this team. So we'll see what happens with Kyrie. But Kyrie opting in, breaking news, mid-podcast. Got to love that.
It's
all right. Go it, ahead.
A couple quick thoughts. So there's a like I say, a contractual commitment there for now. How much Kyrie really still wants to be in Brooklyn, how much the Nets still want him after all this, I think it's fair to say is an open question. I do agree with you in the abstract that there's a chance of this team, if they keep it together, if Kyrie's engaged, if they get a full season of him and Durant, if Ben Simmons is healthy and engaged, like, there's a hell of a lot of talent there. And I think I said this on a previous pod. It's not that I don't believe that they could be a contender, Chris. I'm just not as sold on it as you are, because I also think there's a chance for this to go hard in the other direction because of the volatility of Simmons and Kyrie both. And so that's where I don't trust the trajectory of this team in the short term. But I will be curious now to see what possible trades could come about. We have the whole rest of this offseason. Teams will do their shopping. Teams will see what improvements they can make. And at the end of it all, in a short time, actually, within the next 2-3 weeks, that's when free agency, you know, the big stuff happens in the first couple of weeks. By mid-July, we'll know. And some team sitting out there that wants to contend and then has a window, who knows, might just decide to roll the dice and say, you know what? What will you take for Kyrie? I won't be surprised if that still happens.
Hey, look, and you never know. Maybe, you know, the Nets are not interested in a Laker package right now, but we could get to mid-season and the Nets season could be going nowhere for whatever reason. They could look at the Lakers and say, all right, we'll absorb Russell Westbrook for the end of this year, give you Kyrie, and you give us 2 first-round draft picks back in return. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that could take place over the course of a year, depending how the Nets season goes. But it'll be interesting to see how they all band together, and if it's quickly, and if they're able to get some chemistry early on with that group. A lot of guys that have not played a single minute together with that team, so that'll be a big issue. All right, let's go across the bridge, Howard, to the New York Knicks, who had an interesting draft night. The Knicks were sitting there with the number 11 pick in the draft. They trade out of that for 3 future first-round picks with Oklahoma City. They then attach a first-round pick to get off the contract of Kemba Walker. Now, the Knicks are doing all this to clear cap space. They are about, I think, $17 million under the cap right now, with the potential, with some moves, to get even further. The number one target in New York is Jalen Brunson. The Knicks are not shy about this. The Mavericks are keenly aware of it. Hell, the Knicks signed Rick Brunson, his father, to be an assistant coach on that staff. Rick Brunson's certainly a qualified guy, but that's kind of telegraphing your intentions right there. The Knicks want Jalen Brunson. They know they're going to have to find a way to offer him a max or a close to max contract. They're also hoping that the appeal of being a full-time point guard will resonate with Jalen Brunson. Brunson, if he goes back to Dallas, he'll play with one of the great players of this generation in Luka Doncic, but Luka is kind of the point guard down there, so he won't have the ball in his hands quite as much. In New York, I think one of their selling points is going to be, you can be the point guard. You can be the lead playmaker with this team. Who knows if it's going to work? But the Knicks, They're going all in on free agency once again. What did you think of New York's moves on draft day and kind of how they're positioning themselves for free agency on Friday?
You know, it's interesting, Chris, because we often have seen the Knicks over the last 20 years go star chasing in free agency, right? They swing and they miss, or then they go to the next tier star and it's, you know, somebody who's going to get hurt, or they're already hurt. What, like, this is what they do. And the last time we saw them go just make, you know, just you know, do contortions, contort themselves to clear cap room was when they offloaded Kristaps Porzingis, who was their, you know, at the time, an all-star with an ACL injury, yes, but they're the youngest, best prospect they'd had forever. They traded him just to induce the Mavericks to take bad contracts, to take Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee off their hands because they thought they were getting Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. That backfired, as we know, spectacularly. Doesn't matter what Porzingis became since then, by the way. What matters is you sacrificed what was at the time a very high-value asset just to clear cap room for guys that you didn't get, and you signed a bunch of lesser players. Now, this is different. The pattern is the same in terms of the setup. It's different in that they're not even chasing a superstar this time, as far as we can tell. They're chasing Jalen Brunson. I mean, he's good, and he's 25, and a lot of room to grow. And look, in the abstract, good playmaker, good shooter, defender, high character guy, kind of guy I would want. And a position where the Knicks have needed help at point guard since, I don't know, forever. So I don't mind the idea that this is who they want to get, but quick reference point. A couple years ago, there was a guy who was under-heralded, breaking out as he was entering his prime, at point guard, high character, great defender, great shooter, all the things you'd want. And the Knicks didn't go after Fred VanVleet. I said at the time, I thought, you know what? I wouldn't even blame you for overpaying him. Overpay Fred VanVleet. He's exactly the guy you should want to build around. And they passed on him because, as I understood it, they didn't see him as a true point guard. Well, is Jalen Brunson's like a slightly lesser version of Fred VanVleet and also not a true point guard. I like Brunson. I don't know if all of these contortions that they've gone through and giving up the 11th pick in the draft and then doing all these other things and passing on a bunch of possible prospects for what looks like a win now move for a guy who is not an all-star, might never be an all-star, probably won't be. And we also don't know, aside from, like, he had the three games without Luka against the Jazz in the first round. He played really well in those three games, but that's a really, really small sample. He had a strong playoffs, but again, he's thrived mostly alongside Luka, a transcendent generational type talent. Is Brunson on his own, Chris, worth investing 4 years, $100 million, 4 years, $120 million, whatever it's going to be, on the premise that this is a guy you're building around and that he's going to somehow lift all boats with the Knicks? It feels like a bit of a stretch to me.
I think for the Knicks, though, he is, because it's been decades since they had a real point guard, and it's been such a position of need, and a glaring one at that, that going all out to get a guy that's shown great potential, and all the things you mentioned, high character guy, I think it's worth the flyer. Now, maybe it turns out they'll be overpaying for him, but that wouldn't be kind of a Knicks-y move. A Knicks-y move would be a guy that's over the age of 30 you give a four-year contract to. This guy's 25 years old. I think it's worth taking a run at. I don't see the Dallas Mavericks at this point getting outbid for him. The Mavericks know it's going to cost them an arm and a leg to get this guy. I mean, their mistake was not signing him to that four-year, $55 million extension that he wanted last year. I mean, you sign him to that, look where you are right now with a young, high-level point guard who is under a manageable contract. So the Mavericks, they may have to go 5 years close to full max to keep him. And I think they're aware of it at this point. And I don't think they're going to be outbid to get Jalen Brunson, because I think they know that at this stage of Luka Doncic's career, you got to start adding value around him, not subtracting it. And even if you re-sign Brunson, it doesn't make him untradeable at some point during this contract. And it's better to have the asset and deal with the fallout from it than to let him walk away from nothing. I don't think either one of us think that Jalen Brunson is going to regress significantly. No. He's probably just going to keep getting better. So, you know, that salary, while being pretty high, won't be an untradeable one. So, I think I like what the Knicks are doing in terms of making a run at Brunson. I just don't think they're going to get him. And I think that they'll have done all that, made all those moves, attached a first-round pick to Kemba Walker, given up on their first-round pick in this year's draft, and not really have much to show for it in free agency.
Yeah, and the thing is, like right now, you know, they've got this really nice cache of draft picks, right? Because they traded the 11th pick for three picks from the Thunder, and then they flipped one of those picks and got a different pick.
Conditional.
And they're all probably going to be low, and that's fine, whatever. Having extra picks is always a good thing. I'm certainly not going to knock the Knicks for collecting extra picks. Those can be valuable in trades, but presumably they're going to use another one of those picks to offload Evan Fournier, or maybe offload Julius Randle, or offload Nerlens Noel. Like, they still have to clear more cap room to even make the run at Brunson to give him 20 million.
They may use
a
first
plus.
Round pick to offload Cam Reddish, who they used a first round pick to go acquire. They may actually do that.
Well,
be a Knicks move.
All right, but just funny, but I mean, Reddish is a small contract. He's on the end of his rookie deal. He's like making $5.5 million or something. But yeah, they did give up a pick to get him. I don't think you're going to be able to actually flip Reddish for another pick. That's a really interesting thing to think about, actually, because at the time I actually thought it was like a nice flyer, but that's gone nowhere. And then he got hurt anyway. The problem might just be process here, right? Like, is this the best use of the 11th overall pick when you then facilitated that pick, that move with the Pistons and the Hornets? There was the 13th pick that maybe you would have had access to. Like, there were a bunch of players in there that, you know, the draft experts had some excitement about, certainly. I don't pretend to know for sure whether any of these guys were going to be difference makers for the Knicks. But it speaks, I think, to the larger issue I have with the Knicks over the last 2.5 years under this administration since Leon Rose took over, Chris, which is, once again, the Knicks are suffering from organizational confusion. Are they about winning now or building for the future? Are they going young, building through the draft? Are they making win now moves? Because they keep alternating. And this is another one of those cases. If a team that's rebuilding goes and grabs a bunch of extra picks, as the Knicks just did, when the Thunder do it, we praise them because we know the Thunder are rebuilding. We know that eventually they're going to either use those picks to move up in a draft, or get an extra pick, as they did in this case, or they're going to use it in a massive package for some disgruntled star, whatever. But the Knicks are it's not clear what the plan is, because sometimes they're building through youth and sometimes they're going for win now. Signing Fournier and Kemba Walker last summer was win now moves, and they've now used a pick to offload Kemba Walker, the mistake that they made just a year ago. So this is the problem. I don't think they have a clear, cohesive plan. And if they do, we won't know it, because the most that Leon Rose will do at this point is issue a couple of statements on Twitter via the Knicks PR department to say, hey, we're pleased with all of these machinations on draft night. Like, that's all we get. We have no real idea whether this is a win-now operation, a build-through-the-draft operation, a methodical step-by-step, year-by-year, or is it win-now? Like, they're just all over the map. And so when we're trying to judge these things, it's hard to know, because we don't really know what the plan is, and all the outward signs and moves are in conflict with each other quite often. All that said, I think we'll know more soon, right? Like, I give the Knicks the benefit of the doubt. July 1st is right around the corner, and we'll see what they do in free agency. We'll see what other moves are being made. Are they actually making the whole run at Brunson? If they don't get Brunson, is there a plan B?
That's what scares me.
But listen, it could be absorbing Malcolm Brogdon with the cap room and sending something of little consequence back to Indiana, in which case I'd say bravo. Like, I like Malcolm Brogdon. It hurt a lot, but he could fill a lot of the same roles or needs that we're talking about with Brunson. He's older and has been injury prone, but really high character guy, solid, good defender, can run your team.
The injuries do worry me, though. He's been injury prone recently.
But
that's
until we see what they do with the cap room, it's hard to judge all the stuff we just saw.
Well, it's also a team that thought it was a good idea last summer to sign Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier. I mean, and those two guys have clearly been disasters at this point. I don't. You're giving them a lot more of the benefit of the doubt than I am right now, Howard.
Only because they've set up other moves, and I think it's fair to say, like, if the result of all those moves is they have to spend yet one more pick to offload another contract, all just to overpay Jalen Brunson, I'm not sure that's the best use of it. But at least kind of nudges them forward a little bit. If they don't get Brunson and it's something else, I don't know. I want to see what the something else is.
Yeah, and I'm looking up right now. What does Brunson have? Brogdon has what, like 2 years left on his contract at this point, as I find it right here. Oh, no, he's got 3 years left in his contract. So, well, that's 3 years, $22 million. That's, in today's marketplace, that's not awful. So that wouldn't be a terrible deal either for the Knicks, who need a point guard in the worst way. Who was the last good Knicks point guard? Like Chris Childs? How far back do we have to go?
There was 3 weeks of Jeremy Lin being spectacular. There was
Stephon
a couple,
Marbury, though he wasn't.
There was Marbury, but a lot that came with that. There was Raymond Felton for the first couple months after they signed him and Amari Stoudemire back in 2010. That was fun for a little while. They had 40-year-old version of Jason Kidd. It's spurts. There's like a couple weeks here and a couple weeks there of a good point guard. By the way, real quick, yeah. Bobby Marks has tweeted since you and I spoke earlier on Kyrie that Kyrie can sign an extension up until June 30th. So really, they've got another couple of days to do this. It's not until October, as I thought it might be. Unlikely
to see them reach an extension deal at that point. But
yeah, and as again, he notes,
big win for the Nets.
As he notes, by opting in, Irving is eligible to be traded to any of the 29 teams, and the hard cap restrictions does not apply because the hard cap restriction was specific to sign-in trades. Anyway.
All right. Let's look at some other things out there, Howard. Because
non-New York teams? Are there teams outside of New York?
Yeah, because this went from being a free agency period that I thought could be really exciting to one, now that we have the news of Kyrie, unless you are really into the Jalen Brunson sweepstakes, you're kind of looking around going, what's out there? Because there have been reports that Bradley Beal intends to sign a long-term contract extension with Washington. The Wizards are certainly operating like Beal is going to be back in the fold. I've been hearing a lot lately that Zach LaVine is going back to Chicago on a new deal. Anthony Simons is a lock to re-sign with Portland. It just seems like the big dominoes are starting to fall now in free agency to the point where you're kind of looking around and there are really only guys that fit into those kind of mid-level exception type range who are available, who could be needle movers here. I mean, I guess, let me ask you about Beal. Are you surprised that he's coming back on a new deal with the Wizards?
By the way, does this mean dominoes are falling or they're not falling? I think it means the dominoes are not falling.
Well, I mean, I guess if you look at it that way. I mean, a domino for free agency that you thought was going to be out there is no longer there. That's kind of how I'm looking at it.
So the domino stayed put. It didn't fall. I don't know. Anyway.
However you want to look at the metaphor, Howard. However you want to look at it.
I may be overthinking dominoes.
A little bit.
The Bradley Beal extension is interesting, as it was the last time he and the Wizards extended. Because the same things are true now as a few years ago, which is the Wizards, they're probably in a little better shape now. But it's a pragmatic decision on both sides, right? You can absolutely see it. Bradley Beal is getting the 5 years, $250 million that he can only get from the Wizards. So why not? Why not get the max you're eligible for rather than leaving money on the table and trying to walk away and find something somewhere else? He's also coming off wrist surgery. So I don't know, would that have depressed his market a little bit? Possible. And if you're the Wizards, you're not a team that's in a position to go get another guy even as good as Bradley Beal, much less any better than Bradley Beal. So you might as well keep him until you can figure out where you're heading from here. And maybe they have some confidence that the team that they've put together, the young guys that they've brought in over the last couple of years, and maybe in concert with Porzingis, who they got at midseason, maybe they feel like they're on a better track now. I just think that overall, they're still in the same place I've always felt they were, which was Beal's not good enough to get you into title contention on his own. You don't have an easy path to another all-star. Porzingis is certainly not that guy we've seen. And I just don't know how they're moving forward. How are you even getting back into playoff contention with this roster as is, unless there's a ton of internal improvement? And if you're Bradley Beal, who has been frustrated with the lack of individual awards and individual recognition, you're continuing to tie yourself to a franchise that has not been able to get you the kind of help to win the kind of games, the number of games that would help you get all those other honors and recognition. So I don't want to say they're stuck with each other because like Bradley Beal's a really good player and he's a fine guy to be stuck with. But I just don't see where the path to respectability is for the Wizards right now, and tying yourself to Beal for another 5 years at a max salary. He's turning 29. Like, he's firmly in his prime. This will extend probably past his prime, but I don't know where else they would have gone, right? And I guess the bottom line is, if it doesn't work, you can always trade him later.
Yeah, this is going to be spun when it's officially announced as Bradley Beal committing to Washington, you know, all in on the Wizards. And it'll be a lot of flowery quotes about wanting to win a championship here. I interpret this as Bradley Beal just taking the money and figuring everything else out later. I don't blame him for that.
Yep.
Like, if you can guarantee yourself like $250 million, you do it one way or the other. But Howard, in today's NBA, signing long-term contracts does not mean anything when it comes to tying you to a team. Ben Simmons just forced his way out of Philadelphia with three full seasons left on his contract. James Harden had an extra year on his contract when he pushed his way out of Brooklyn. You know, we're talking about, like, you know, in the last couple of days, there was talk of Kevin Durant pushing his way out of Brooklyn if the Kyrie situation went south. Kevin Durant has 4 years left of his contract. The extension that Kevin Durant signed last year has yet to kick in. And they're talking about Kevin Durant asking out of Brooklyn. If and when it comes to it, and Bradley Beal looks around in a year, 2 years, and says, ah, look, this team's not going anywhere, I want to be traded, he is going to have the power to force that. He just is. Because the Wizards, in a rebuilding situation, are not going to want to have a sour player around. And they're going to want to maximize his value whenever they can. So if Bradley Beal is playing well in a year and the Wizards are not, there will be a market for him out there somewhere. Somebody will say, Bradley Beal, with 4 years left on your contract, we'll take you. You're still one of the best shooters in the NBA. You're a great pure scorer. We'll bring you on. That's the only way this makes sense. It kind of is confirming sort of what you said. But this is not about Bradley Beal being enamored with DC, with all due respect. It's not. It's about Bradley Beal wanting the money, as he should, taking the money and then letting the chips fall where they may, figuring it all out in a year, 2 years from now.
Pragmatic decision all the way around, as I say. It makes sense for the Wizards because he's the best player they've got. And if he leaves, where are you then? Best decision for Bradley Beal because it's $250 million. And yes,
of course.
If either side decides this is not working, yes, of course, they can figure it out later. They can trade him at any time. He can ask for a trade at any time. I also think the Wizards are in the same position that the Blazers have been in with Dame Lillard, which is we're not in any position or we're not the kind of team that is going to just trade you as one of the best players in recent franchise history, in Beal's case, and certainly in franchise history, in Lillard's case. We're not going to trade you unless you ask us to. I'm not going to be the schmuck if I'm, you know, the GM. I'm not going to be the schmuck who voluntarily traded a guy who was the best player we had in years. Like, it's the same thing. You wait until the guy says, you know what, I think it's time. And then you say, okay, that's fine. Because the Wizards may feel it's the right thing to do anyway. The Wizards might have already felt that over the last couple of years, but you're not going to voluntarily do it when you've got a guy who's, you know, he hasn't been a perennial All-Star. He's a three-time All-Star, but he's perennial All-Star talent. But you don't just give up on him. That's fine. As is usually the case, I'm just very curious to see what else they've got going. Like, are the Wizards, do they think that a full season of Bradley Beal and Kristaps Porzingis as you know, it's not co-stars because Porzingis is not that level, but he can do a lot that they haven't had at that position before, right? Defensively and offensively, if he can last the whole season healthy, if Bradley Beal can last the whole season healthy, for that matter, too. I will just say one quick thing, though, Chris. It's not without risk for the Wizards. Like, you know, there's a point in time where we would have said, oh, John Wall, 5 years, 250, fine, whatever. You can always move him later. Like, that, it's hard after a while. Westbrook, it gets hard. Like, when you get up to the level of salary that these guys are at and that where Beal will be later in this contract, anything that goes wrong, Gamey Rhodes, gets hurt, whatever, it can still be a problem.
I agree. Early in Bradley Beal's career, he had a history of foot problems. He overcame them, to his credit, in recent years, but he had a history of foot problems early on. This past season, he had a bad wrist, had surgery at the end of the season, towards the end of the season, to repair that injury. Bradley Beal gets hurt, there is no trade market for him whatsoever. So there is a big risk in bringing him back. But, you know, if the Wizards were determined to keep that asset, which, as I said earlier in the show, all teams should keep assets. The Mavericks should keep their asset. You can always trade him down the line. I get it from their side. I get it from Bradley Beal's side. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the next couple of years with that. Zach LaVine, as I mentioned, feels like he's going back to Chicago. That's at least what the perception is around the league. Detroit, I was talking to someone today about Detroit and what they're looking to do. It does seem like their interest in DeAndre Ayton has cooled considerably since the draft. I don't think that the Pistons believed they could get Jalen Duren, that center, the 18-year-old center from Memphis. They got him, and the sense I get from people that talk to Detroit is that there's more of an appetite for developing Duren than there is spending a whole bunch of money or max-level money to get DeAndre Ayton out of Phoenix. So that opens the door, I guess, for somebody else to go after Ayton, for Phoenix to agree to a deal with Ayton. In fact, you know, the Pistons, they're at like, what, $37, $38 million in available cap space at this point. One name that came up with them that I heard was Miles Bridges, that they could make a run at Bridges, because Bridges actually at this point makes more sense for what they're trying to do roster-wise. He kind of is a better fit than what DeAndre Ayton would be. But he is kind of right around that age where you'd want guys to be with this Detroit team. So they're an interesting team kind of to look at. The question I have for you, though, is about the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers, they were aggressive over the last few days. They go out and they get Jeremy Grant. Grant, a two-way player, excellent. They keep their number 7 overall pick in the draft. They use that pick. Did the Blazers move the needle over the last couple of days? Like, did they get good enough where it makes sense to continue to commit to Damian Lillard?
I mean, look, Damian Lillard's still committed to the Blazers, and the Blazers are clearly still committed to Damian Lillard. You're not making a move for Jeremy Grant unless that's the plan. But they didn't move the 7th pick in the draft, which is something that we thought they would do in their effort to patch this thing up. They draft Shaedon Sharpe. Okay. Is he going to help them win now? Probably not.
Who didn't play last year.
And who didn't play last year.
Yeah, that was an interesting decision there.
They got Jeremy Grant without giving up much to get him, so that's fine. And, like, are they better off with Jeremy Grant than they were before? Yeah, fine. But, like, they're still at a talent deficit, having offloaded McCollum and Norm Powell and Covington and everybody else from last season. Jason Hart has been a nice pickup for them, and he's been good for them. They're going to obviously sink a bunch of money into Anfernee Simons, but, like, Dame Lillard and Anfernee Simons, how is that not just Lillard and McCollum 2.0, another undersized backcourt of offensive-minded guards? I like the move for Jeremy Grant. They can't end there. They need more. Are they re-upping Nurkic, and at what price? Is that enough? You know, I think I just don't see where they have actually moved forward yet. And again, we're saying this on June 27th. Free agency has not yet begun. There are other moves to make. Maybe somebody else out there really wants Shaedon Sharpe, and he still becomes part of a deal for some veteran help. But they're on the clock. Damian Lillard's window will not be open forever, and he's coming off an abdominal injury that was pretty serious, the biggest injury of his career, the longest absence of his career. I'm just not excited about anything the Blazers have done so far, but there's time still to get this thing fixed.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade Shaedon Sharpe, because if he's good enough that you're going to trade him for something real, he's good enough to want to keep around. Because I don't know what the move is to make the Portland Trailblazers a championship level contending team. I just don't think those moves are out there. You mentioned Nurkic. I think he comes back either on, probably on another deal, but that's just continuing the same kind of thing they've had going on in Portland in recent years. Simons, look, he's a good player, but he was getting a lot of run and a lot of shots in the second half of the season with Lillard out, McCollum gone. What is he on a team with Jeremy Grant and with Damian Lillard? Still a good player, but is he better than C.J. McCollum? I don't know. C.J. McCollum is obviously a very good player. So, I think the next question I have for the Blazers is, do they extend Damian Lillard? Do they give him 2 more years on that contract? And then what's your franchise direction after that? They're just still, I think they got better. I love the Grant acquisition. They didn't have to give up anything to go and get him. They use a trade exception. They give up a late first-round pick, or a 2025 first-round pick, I guess. I think that's a good pickup for a guy that's still very much in his prime and is very much a two-way player, but they're still a team to me that, at best at the moment, is fighting for a spot in the play-in tournament. And that's not really what you're looking for in the final kind of prime years of Damian Lillard's career. So,
no. And by the way, like, you know, need as if this needs to be said, the West has only gotten harder. The Pelicans have a lot of really good talent. Part of it supplied to them by the Blazers.
Lakers just supplying the Pelicans with talent.
Yes. And look, maybe the Spurs are going to take back take a step backward if they're truly going to move off of DeJounte Murray as has been reported. But the Clippers, who were in the play-in, are going to get Kawhi back, and they're going to be really good again. And Minnesota is young and getting better, and Denver's getting guys back. The Jazz, to this point, have not given up on anything or traded either of their stars. Like, where is the opening for the Trailblazers to get back to even the play-in, much less the playoffs? And, like, they still have a ton of work to do, and it does make me wonder, like, if you can't get much more done in the next several weeks, and this is just who they are, we're going to be right back to talking about, you know, when's Dame Lillard going to ask out? I know. I know it's ridiculous. I know Dame Lillard chastises us all for even talking about it, since he has never said he wants out. But, man, is this it for, like, he's just going to be strapped to mediocre teams for the rest of his career in Portland until he retires? Like, doesn't seem like the best way.
Well, who knows, Howard? Maybe they'll make a trade for James Harden. and this time next week we'll be discussing James Harden to the Blazers.
Harden, Simmons, and Kyrie all to the Blazers. How about that?
James Harden, by the way, how has the drama surrounding James Harden been non-existent? It seems like James Harden and the Rockets are on the same page. I've been hearing kind of two-year extension on – oh, sorry, the Sixers, not the Rockets. I've been hearing James Harden two-year extension on this on that deal, giving a three-year deal with the Rockets. Again, the Sixers, perfectly reasonable deal, by the way, for James Harden, who has regressed, but a three-year contract at max-level dollars for that player – that's perfectly reasonable to me in today's NBA. $120 million, $130 million seems fine.
Funny, James Harden seems to be able to accept the fact that it's a different stage of his career and that the Sixers might have some legitimate concerns to and want to go shorter on a contract with him to keep their options open and have maximum flexibility in a deal that works for everybody. I wonder why Kyrie Irving can't come to that same point with the Nets after bailing on them repeatedly.
Well, I feel like by this time next week, Howard, when we do this podcast again, we'll have whole new set of things to talk about, because it's never boring in the NBA.
Never, 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 ever. And maybe we can actually start off next week's podcast with somebody other than Kyrie Irving, but I suspect somehow he will drag us back into this.
Somehow, some way. We'll find out next week, Howard.
We will. Always a pleasure, my friend.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.